big show, and I mean it. I mean, this is a big show for you here today. Andy Behrens joins me to go over a lot of stuff. We recap the things that we actually care about from Week 18, the things that really matter in a messy, messy week. Then we dive into some Yahoo internal data to show who the real league winners were this year. And then we wrap it up with our 2024 fantasy season awards. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, January 6th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Apologies up front as we're talking ball that I sound worse than I usually do. My usually annoying voice is going to sound even more terrible today. I'm getting over a weekend full of sickness, but nevertheless, doesn't matter. It's still a hell of a day to talk ball. A lot of things happened over said weekend, and join me to do just that is Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, I thought it was a pretty great weekend. For a weekend that involved, you know, obviously week 18 is always weird. And we got some weird players and some wild games that seemed unnecessarily close. But man, if you didn't enjoy like the late game on Saturday, if you didn't like if Vikings and Lions doesn't have you ready for playoff football, I don't know. I mean, that was great. Like this was a between what the NFC South gave us, again, very weird, but between what the NFC South gave us and what the Lions gave us on Sunday, just a good weekend of football.
Yeah, I will cop to the fact that I did not see the fourth quarter of Steelers Bengals live. I had to rewatch it Sunday morning because the NyQuil hit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't quite make it to the fourth quarter of that one. Tried my best, but yeah, still overall enthralling weekend of football and a lot of like, I would say, immediate takeaways that are going to matter for the postseason, but also some big picture takeaways to talk about for next season as well and over the course of the offseason. So that's kind of what we're going to do today. We're going to try to cut both cloths here. We got a packed show in order to do that. We have three parts of our show today. We've got the first part where we're going to hit on the things that we actually care about from week 18. Because as Andy mentioned, there's a lot of nonsense in week 18. There's a lot of like, I mean, Joe Milton putting up a performance of the lifetime to get the Patriots to the fourth overall pick. There is a Titans quarterback carousel that gets them into the first overall pick. Then, you know, there's a lot of weirdness, but there's some important things to talk about as well. One note for that, we're not going to talk about coach firings. I know there's already been a couple. We'll probably have it sounds like the hiring process is going to be longer than usual this year, which I think is probably good for these teams, but also it's going to be good for us. So I think we can push that content out a little bit. We'll wait till all of the information is in before we kind of do a little bit of a fallout at some point here in the next few weeks on that. In the second part of the show, we're going to share some of the Yahoo's internal data to show you who really were the true league winners this year and the lessons that we can take from that. And then we end the show with Andy Behrens handing out some fantasy hardware with his 2024 season awards. But let's waste no more time. Let's get into the first part of the show here. Let's talk about the things we actually care about from week 18, Andy. We each have two or three. I want you to start with your first one on the Detroit Lions defense.
Oh, man. Just a signature game for Detroit's defense. And I will... since we're admitting to things, I will cop to the fact that we were at a bar for more than half this game. So I didn't always catch exactly what the broadcast team was giving us. But nonetheless, just an absolutely signature game for Detroit's defense for Aaron Glenn. You know, a good sign for the Lions, I think, that we're not talking about Brian Flores coming out of this game. We're talking about Aaron Glenn. It was an approach that has not actually worked against Sam Darnold all year, and they made it work. Detroit blitzed on over 55% of Darnold's dropbacks. He's been great against the blitz all season, but he went 10 of 23 against it in this game. They were in man coverage on 2/3 of his dropbacks, which doesn't seem like the way you would approach Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson. but it worked. Meek Robertson was great. Obviously, the corners were great for Detroit. Just absolutely stupendous stuff. They were incredible inside the red zone, particularly inside the 10-yard line. Fun fact from Doug Farrar that I caught this morning, former Yahoo colleague, Sam Darnold went 1 for 9 inside the 7-yard line. Addison and Jefferson end up combining for 4 catches and 54 yards, all of that yardage by Jefferson, on 15 targets. I don't think another team can do this to Minnesota and to those receivers. So I don't even there's not like a blueprint here necessarily.
Yeah.
But just a signature performance from a great defense. And man, like if you had to pick one of those two teams that really needed the bye, I think it felt like going into it that maybe, you know, you were a little bit concerned that, wow, have we already seen the best of the Lions? You know, are they past their peak this season? You know, they had the really early bye, haven't had a break in a long time. So, like, I think they needed it more than the Vikings, perhaps. You know, Vikings obviously still a great team despite a tough game. But, man, the Lions got exactly what they needed. And I think it was just a reset on our expectations for the Lions, right? Because, I feel like the general mood was we've moved on from the Lions as the prohibitive favorite and the top of the power rankings and all that. And, you know, who's going to knock them off? And, man, the defense showed up in a big way. The offense always shows up. Gibbs was tremendous. Oh. So just an incredibly encouraging game from the Lions. And they look like Super Bowl favorites again. All of a sudden
the shot of Aaron Glenn kind of like casually sitting on the bench with his I think like his foot up and his arm on the back of the bench like late in the game as the Lions were closing it out, that was like if you were making a YouTube thumbnail of that game, that should have been it. Because man, I mean, what it just it was incredible. What a great defensive performance and an ultimate like, hey, injury excuses are bullshit. I mean, nobody is more banged up than the Detroit Lions, right?
Yes,
defense, especially. They've lost players at every level. And, like, they got Alex Anzalone back last night, and he was definitely a difference maker for them, their linebacker. He was awesome. He was one of the players of the game. He was electric. But, yeah, I mean, they took Amik Robertson, who was a, you know, cast off from the Raiders. Okay, and he was mostly been playing as their nickelback, you know, and come to find out, like, oh, he played against Justin Jefferson in high school or something like that. So we're just going to kick him to the outside, and he's going to, according to Next Gen Stats, cover him on 84% of his routes and do a fantastic job. Because, yeah, I mean, we could talk about the Sam Darnold of it all, and Sam was obviously rattled from go. You know, he was clearly bothered. He was missing high. He was inaccurate all night. But they were doing a pretty good job in coverage. Like, you could definitely go back on these plays and say, like, oh, this guy's open, that guy's open. And he definitely was, you know, he wasn't seeing it because I think he was rattled, because I think they were rattling him. It was a great defensive effort, as I'm saying here. But I thought they did a good job in coverage there, taking things away. And you're right, Andy, like, nobody does this to the Minnesota Vikings with these receivers. Like, let's just play a bunch of press man and blitz the hell out of them and like dare them, and the Lions dared them and they won in this one.
Yeah, it was it's pretty easy to point at Sam Darnold, and you know, like, some of his best moments throughout this season, and the you know, if we were to go back and consider some of the things when we were really raving about him earlier in the year, it's, you know, he's made some throws with people hanging off of him. He's made some terrific plays under serious pressure. Yeah. And he's been great against the blitz all season, but when things got really compressed, especially in the red zone, and they kind of throttled him and did not give him a lot of time, and the windows weren't open for very long. Like, it's easy to sort of freeze frame and say, aha, here's an open receiver. But the windows weren't open for that long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you gotta be like, not just accurate, but like really finely accurate in red zone offense. And they were just great. I can't imagine another team doing this to the Vikings, and I can't imagine it working again, right? Given the quality of these receivers. I mean, man, if you just blitz this team all day and play press man coverage, like, you're going to give up four or five. Every team in the league is going to give up four or five splash plays to guys like Jefferson and Addison. It feels miraculous that it worked. And some of it is probably, you know, the amount of man is probably overstated by the number of, like, just, you know, red zone and inside the 10 dropbacks and all that. But
yeah, that's fair.
Still, it's
66.7% according to Next Gen. Like, that's a lot, no matter how many, like, inside the 10 snaps they had.
Yeah, just an incredibly impressive performance. And the idea that the defense can still get healthier is really impressive. It's also just, you come off that game and it's so difficult to imagine a team going into Detroit. Like, it seemed like a great atmosphere, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. going to be difficult for a team to go into Detroit and get a win.
No, very difficult. Yeah, they played cover zero on 14 snaps, which is more than any defense in a game this season, which is just, again, unbelievable stuff against these wideouts. And I think your point about how the windows, if they were open, they weren't open for very long, was best expressed when Sam Darnold would get out of the pocket and it was just nothing. Like, did he make one play out of the pocket last night? I don't remember it if he did, you know, like, there just was.
He's been great in those situations all year, right? That's been a big part of, like, what's different about Sam Darnold and what's been so sensational about him.
Yeah. So just, again, hats off to Aaron Glenn. Like, if he's not a head coach at the end of this cycle, I think that'd be pretty crazy. He seems like obviously a guy that got this defense up to play in this moment. And it is a defense full of backups, that's just been wrecked by injuries. And again, is taking a cast off from the Raiders, Amik Robertson, who was their slot corner all season. And is just having him shadow the best receiver in the league. That's incredible. It's just crazy stuff. This is not one of my points, but I did just have to mention it because you mentioned his name. Jahmyr Gibbs, I mean, my God, like, is he the best player in football? I don't know. You know, Scott and I were talking about it on the preview show, and I tweeted about it last night. It's just he's like my favorite running back to watch right now. It's a great cast of running backs in the league right now, but he is truly an incredible player.
I will also say I'm really glad he had that moment because it feels weird to say that Jahmyr Gibbs has been a little bit overlooked, and that's not necessarily true in fantasy, but just nationally, given the historic season that Saquon has had and the basically historic season that Derrick Henry is. I mean, Derrick Henry is going to come in second in rushing with over 1,900 yards, right? Like, the guys at the absolute top of the rushing leaderboard have been so good, and it's been so, you know, historically significant that we just, like, Bijan hasn't gotten enough attention and Jahmyr Gibbs maybe hasn't gotten enough attention. So for him to have that game in that moment was it felt like a little bit of justice.
Yeah, obviously Saquon Barkley doesn't play in week 18. Derrick Henry did, but at the same time, Jahmyr Gibbs leads the league in total touchdowns, which is just was super impressive. I mean, what a great player. And it was definitely fun for people to, you know, resurface some of the draft takes when he was taken. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I had bad takes about it too, but man, we are he's just an incredible player. My first one here is the thing I care about from week 18. The Bengals are out of the playoffs, obviously, officially now, which, I mean, some stupid discourse about the Bengals being out of the playoffs. I get that people wanted to see Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins in the postseason, but this Bengals team did not deserve to go to the playoffs, okay? How about, you know, again, Joe Burrow, great player. Don't lose in week one against the damn Patriots. How about that? Like, the Patriots had just one and done to their head coach, okay? How about that? Like, let's not – we always forget that the Bengals are horrible in September every season. And the offense, too. It's not just the defense, but the offense was terrible to start the season. Or not terrible, but they were definitely playing below expectations. That was an issue. I know Higgins was hurt and Chase was coming off of an injury or coming off of a holdout, excuse me. So it was definitely a slow start to the season, classic Bengals. And this defense has been one of the worst units in the entire NFL. I know that the Denver Broncos, they went against the Chiefs B squad. Well, yeah, no kidding. Like, when you don't have Patrick Mahomes and some of your best players out there, the Chiefs are going to be bad. Like, and the Denver Broncos have been a pretty good team all season. So I think they have one of the best defenses in the league and an offense that's been perfectly capable. So now that the Bengals are officially out of it, which, again, I think makes sense based on how, like, nobody, this idea that, oh, the Chiefs laid down for the Broncos because they were scared of letting the Bengals in the postseason. That's just so hilarious. Like, it's not even worth talking about. But now that the Bengals are officially out of the mix, they fired Lou Anarumo, which, I mean, I think Lou Anarumo has had good moments as a coach, right?
Yeah.
But listen, you have one of the worst defenses in the league. At some point, you know, somebody's got to take the fall for that. He takes the fall for it. They have to find a new coordinator, start over from a scheme perspective. The personnel's an issue. And on top of that, they're also juggling the Chase and Higgins contract situation. So a lot to stew on here for the Bengals over the next few months.
Yeah, I like on the one hand, I mean, I would certainly understand it if T. Higgins goes elsewhere, deserves to get paid. Hard to pay everybody. I hope this wasn't the last that we see of the Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase offense, because it's a party. It was absolutely awesome all season. Burrow was incredible, absolutely incredible. Like that was fun. And I do like they would have been a fun playoff team, obviously, because they could be a real agent of chaos in the postseason, right? Because they can. I mean, they can give 30 points to the best defenses in the league. And there's not that many teams out there that you would say that of. So they could have been a problem. I agree. It's hilarious. The idea that the Chiefs they've got multiple Super Bowls in their pocket already. They're not scared of anybody. They're not like the Chiefs aren't running and hiding from anybody. They just cared about resting players and not getting anybody else injured. That's, it's wild to think that the Chiefs would look across the league at the number of teams that didn't care who they were playing in the, right. In the wild card round. Right. Like I went through some mental gymnastics about, oh man, is Washington really going to go? Well, like, is Green Bay going to go hard? Or all these teams probably care about whether they match up with Philly or this other team. They don't care. They're like, the priority was let's stay healthy. Let's get rest. You know, the Chargers cared and that was about it. So the Chiefs certainly didn't care who was backing into the playoffs in the AFC, not really on their radar. Like the Bengals have a lot of right answers on the roster. Chase Brown really broke out this year and was great. And you know, he's not dealing with an injury that's going to compromise him for next season. They have one of the best answers at one of the most difficult spots to fill on defense, right? Like Hendrickson was great this year. They have some pieces.
He also needs a contract extension though. Complained about that justly last offseason, wanted a different contract. And they're like, okay, well, we're not trading you. So tough.
Yeah. They've got, I mean, it's just like, they've got like two or three of the most important pieces all do significant, you know, contracts and raises simultaneously. And that is, it was a tough life in the NFL, but I do, you know, obviously I hope Higgins and Chase and Burrow stick together for another like five or six seasons. And we just get to see, you know, Joe Burrow's peak with a couple of the most dynamic and like complementary receiving weapons in the game.
I really hope so too. I go feel like I'll go back and forth on a daily basis on whether it happens or not, whether he stays or whether he goes, just Higgins specifically, because he can go elsewhere and just make, I think he could be like a top three paid receiver in the league just because he is that he's not like a top three receiver in the league, but just he's a unique player to hit the market at his age, at his skill level. And there's so many receiver needy teams out there. I think he could cash in at the same time. I think maybe 30 to 31 other teams keeps this core together and never thinks twice about it. So it's just tough that it's happening. I mean, tough. I feel no sympathy for the Bengals, but it's tough that that it is happening to the Bengals specifically, because I think every other team would make this work.
Yeah. And it probably comes down to, you know, what is the desire that trio has to just stay together and just be aligned throughout their individual peaks. Right. Cause you know, they could all go to the Hall of Fame together. It's that good, right? Yeah. Like Burrow was the only guy who was sniffing 5,000 yards this season. He came close. Just an obviously tremendous year from him. We'll talk later in the fantasy awards about the ridiculous season that Ja'Marr Chase had. But man, those three, if they're actually able to run it back. I mean, this is the, you know, it's always exciting to have a great player like Higgins, you know, actually hit free agency and where is he going to land and all that. But this is one of those cases where I feel like the best situation for him. The best situation for him is the most money. But other than that, the best situation for him is probably Cincinnati.
Yeah, certainly from a statistical perspective, I think that's probably true. We'll see what the Bengals do this offseason to try to avoid Joe Burrow being stuck in perpetual, you know, mid 2000s. I always say mid 2000s just if referring to like several years ago, mid-2000s Saints Drew Brees. That's where Burrow is kind of stuck in that era right now with some of those bad defenses and just bonkers passing numbers. Okay, give me your second thing that you care about from Week 18.
Yeah, it's Bryce Young, man. Bryce Young elevating himself like legitimately into the 2025 fantasy conversation, and not in a fringe kind of way, but like in a, is Bryce Young a top 10, top 12 fantasy quarterback in 2025? like I didn't think we'd get here. We're kind of here. Number one, I don't think he's ever going to have a receiving core this bad again. And not to say that some people didn't play well, but like the best thing he had going for him was, I don't even know. Was it Adam? I guess it was Adam Thielen. Like, you know, Adam Thielen not being complete dust at this stage of his career was good. Thielen was fine. But like, I don't know. We got developmental young players on the field. We got, you know, nobody that significantly stresses a defense. And Bryce Young's transformation from September to January, was just wild. The idea that, you know, we have Bryce Young throwing like look away Steph Curry touchdown passes in week 18 is just, if you would have told any of us that in September, even ahead of the benching, I mean, just no way. A lot of wild things happen in the NFL, and we always caution you at the beginning of the season, get ready for some things that you never could have imagined. I continually, even though I know that, this one has really surprised me. Cause you know, as we talked about months ago, it looked like Bryce Young was guessing in September, insofar as it's possible for an NFL quarterback to look like he's playing defense. Almost that was Bryce Young, right? He was just purely reacting. It was, you know, he seemed flummoxed all the time. And just absolutely in command in the final like 3 or 4 weeks of this season. And then it finally began to translate. You know, he had some games maybe a month and a half ago where like maybe it didn't show up in terms of fantasy output, but he really looked in command, and he looked like he was really orchestrating things, and he looked comfortable, and he was making plays in sort of chaos situations. But then in these last three games, 7 touchdown passes, 0 interceptions, 3 rushing touchdowns. Like all of a sudden we got Bryce Young as like a legit rushing threat. He's got 5 rushing scores over his last 6 games. That offense is fun. I mean, shoot, in 2 of their last 3 games, they put up 44 and they put up 36. Like, I don't know. I haven't ranked quarterbacks for 2025 yet. I don't even want to think about it yet, but I don't know who's been better over the last month. Not 10 guys.
He's been incredible. And look, it was the Falcons defense. I get it. Yeah. You know, he was under pressure on 15.8% of his dropbacks. That's the lowest rate of his career per Next Gen Stats. But okay, great. He had 5 total touchdowns. Honestly, that little pitch that he gave to Jalen Coker, who by the way was great in this game, and I definitely think it's a keeper. I'm at the point now where like their undrafted free agent wide receiver is better than their first round wide receiver, which that's a little bit of a problematic statement to be making, but it is a testament to what I think Coker has given them, and I think he's part of the future of this receiver. And by the way, I think Thielen is probably back next year, so they need like one more guy. Just going to be an interesting room to monitor. But anyways, Young's like little pitch to Jalen Coker, that should have been his 6th touchdown. That would, if Coker had just pushed one more yard in, that would have been an incredible statement to what already was a big statement game there for Bryce Young. I think you made a perfect point there, which was you could not have given me 1,000 guesses, like 1,000 tries to guess that Bryce Young in week 18 of the 2024 NFL season would be doing the Steph Curry look away, throwing a touchdown, because he's playing with that much confidence now, because he was a completely confidence bereft player in the first 2 weeks of the season. I can't wait to read pieces about like what was the process when Bryce Young was benched. I've heard, you know, Dan Morgan, the general manager, former Panthers player, was really a part of like building Bryce back up during this period. I want to know, like, what was he doing? What was Dave Canales doing? You know, Dave Canales said after the game, like, we know Bryce is our quarterback. And that gives us just so much more freedom going into the offseason and so much clarity about like what we need to do in free agency. So, yeah, I mean, Panthers are definitely a team to watch. I think from a fantasy perspective, there will be some interesting sleepers there. Producer Colin put on the outline, he bolded it, so he definitely wants me to read it on the show. Producer Colin, bold prediction, the Panthers are going to win the NFC South in 2025. He says they're giving early Lions energy, Bud Light version of it, though. Okay, that's aggressive. That's aggressive.
Yeah.
But definitely, I think they're a team on the rise.
Yeah, I mean, we gotta fix the defense, but I suppose the entire division can say that. Like, it's just a division full of flawed teams that can't defend. So, and they're just right there with them. But all of a sudden, they're an offense that, again, I don't think the receiving core is going to be this bad, maybe for the next 20 years in Carolina. So, like, that gets better, and they're already able to put up 30 against you. And they, like, I don't know, yes, it was just the Atlanta defense, but they're going to get to play them twice next year, too. They get to play the Bucs twice next year. And, like, you know, they're in this division, and I think they're as good as any of these teams right at this moment. I can't say enough good things about the transformation of Bryce Young. And like, in addition to it being a small miracle of coaching when they benched him to the, you know, and then getting him to the point that he's at now, what a difficult thing for a young player to go through.
Impressive
that they created an environment that's healthy enough that he could still develop after getting benched in such a, public and, players don't come back from that all the time.
Humiliating.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a bunch of people were having the conversation about whether, you know, like not even a conversation about whether Bryce Young could make it all the way back, but you know, had basically written him off, right? And it wasn't even unreasonable to write him off. He hadn't put anything good on tape. The opening games were a disaster. He looked confused all the time. And for Bryce Young himself to be able to come through that and actually improve and not, you know, just sort of bury his head and, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing. From his perspective, from the perspective of the front office and the coaching staff that they got him here, it's incredible. And he goes into next season like as a fringy, I don't know, the way I was thinking about Trevor Lawrence coming into 2024, that's about how I'm thinking about Bryce Young right now.
Yeah, like I said, I hope they can just find him I don't know if it needs to be a number one receiver. I mean, yeah, they could definitely be a T. Higgins team, that's for sure, because they just need like an X, and they need a guy who could take the top off, because
they've like gone from a point where like a free agent receiver might have looked at that and been like, well, you're gonna have to really pay me if I'm going to that environment, to now like, oh yeah, I can ball out in Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, I always come back to like the Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen thing where those guys lifted each other to new heights. That would be a great spot to find something like that here for like, okay, Bryce can take the next step and whichever receiver it is can take a next step. There's just been so many examples of that across the league where that's successful. The Panthers maybe could find something like that. And that's really like their one need on offense, I would say, you know, because otherwise like they have great complementary pass catchers. The offensive line's good. And then at the same time, they just have so many needs on defense. They can go hard in the paint to fix that side of the ball, because that is definitely going to need to be happening. Speaking of bad defense, obviously my last one here, that we'll do, for something I care about from week 18, Michael Penix to Drake London in the same game. That's something I care about, man. Look, I saw Underdogs Josh Norris say on Twitter, this is a reminder to not use week 18 stats for fantasy debates in the offseason. Number one, wholeheartedly disagree. And number two, I responded to Josh and I said, hey, buddy, I will be including Drake London's week 18 stats in the full season picture, and there is nothing you can do about it. Career high 18 targets, career high 187 receiving yards for Drake London. And man, Michael Penix, not a perfect player, not a perfect prospect by any means, But he can rip that thing deep. He can rip that thing on outbreakers to Drake London. And he's probably the first quarterback in Drake London's career that is just willing to throw it up and give him chances in tight coverage, which is so refreshing. We see so many timid young quarterbacks. You know, I mean, we've talked about this with Caleb Williams a ton. Like, hey, just throw it up and like give these guys chances to go attack the football. They're a bunch of these guys are ball winners, especially the guy that played with Michael Penix last year. And I mean, like Penix was just throwing it up to Drake London consistently. Super exciting to see that from those guys in week 18, because I think that is going to mean something for next season.
Yeah, the sequence where they basically run the same route, same play to Drake London twice in a row, and they're like, okay, stop it a second time, and they couldn't, and it becomes a touchdown. Like, that's Drake London is that guy, and it's awesome to see him paired with a quarterback who has the arm to reach him anywhere, and the confidence to give him those opportunities, like real contested opportunities. London was great. London's probably, man, is London the guy that we thought maybe Garrett Wilson could become? Like, he's like a top six, top eight fantasy receiver going into next year, maybe higher than that. I mean, second rounder, surely.
Yeah, Sigmund Bloom made the point on quote tweeting one of my posts saying, like, Drake London's going to go lower in fantasy next season than he went this season, and that might be a mistake. And I think that's probably true. London had a fine season this year. I don't think he'd go down as a miss on where he went. Maybe he didn't like exceed expectations. He probably just met expectations. His week 18 numbers are going to juice his numbers over the course of the season, but it doesn't, again, I know that doesn't help your fantasy team, but it still is a thing that happened in the NFL season. It doesn't just not matter. This is not a preseason game for Falcons were trying to win that damn game because the Bucs had lost, which they did not. The Bucs won, and they'll be in the postseason. They'll face Washington in the first round. You know, they would have been in the playoffs. So this game certainly mattered for Drake London and all those guys. I think he's going to be a really good pick next year, almost no matter what Michael Penix's ceiling is. But all right, Andy, give me your last thing that you care about here from week 18.
This is really a week 17, week 18 thing. It's probably the emergence of Ricky Pearsall. He's just absolutely fantastic in the closing weeks of the season. Final two games, 14 catches, 210 yards, two touchdowns. He looked as good as any receiver that we've seen in a Niners uniform this year. I don't know exactly what it looks like for him next year. I don't know what the receiving core in San Francisco looks like exactly next year. They're another team that's got, you know, they got everybody to pay, and they got, you know, I don't know what it's going to look like. I just know that he's a real answer. And he's another guy who, you know, talk about somebody who's had a journey from the summer to right now. Like, he was a gunshot victim in August.
Right.
And it's crazy that given where we were in September with Ricky Pearsall, that we are now at a point where you're like, wow, he's got size. He's got speed. We knew from the college tape that he's got incredible hands. This looks like a potential 1,000-yard receiver, which is, you know, that makes like four of them, five of them on this roster.
It's a good point. I'm with you that we don't know what that receiver room is going to look like, and that is certainly, it's going to make it difficult to project in the offseason and things like that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, though, man, I want to bet on Ricky Pearsall, which I'm really glad that I'm saying that, because definitely at times this year, like I wrote in the Reception Perception rookie report, like it was shaky the first, you know, few weeks of the season, but I was like, I don't want to be hard on this guy because he is literally coming off of a gunshot wound and also missed a bunch of practice time with an injury, you know, even before being shot in the freaking chest. But the fact that he stacked these weeks at the end of the season, and I think the film looks great, the separation is good, the hands, as you mentioned, have looked really strong. Yeah, he looks like a guy that in a healthier version of the 49ers offense, which, I mean, the fact that Garendo even went down in week 18 was just like icing on the most miserable cake that anybody's ever been served. It was just like, what a disaster class season for San Francisco. That was really good to see. This is going to be a healthier environment, I think, for Ricky Pearsall to be in. It was really good to see him play well towards the end of the season. But okay, let's take our first break. Andy, when we come back, we're going to talk through some Yahoo internal data right after this. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. We have some internal Yahoo League data to go through here for this section of the recap show. Andy, let's talk through the top 10 players on most first place teams in the regular season on Yahoo Fantasy. Number one, buckle up. It's Jalen McMillan, but Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver at 23.18%. Number two is T. Higgins at 23%. Saquon Barkley, Jonathan Taylor, Bucky Irving, Joe Burrow, Jahmyr Gibbs, Baker Mayfield, J.K. Dobbins, and I just mentioned Isaac Garendo before the break. He's also on this list as well. You can take, I'm just going to throw that list at you. We'll show it on the screen here on YouTube as well. Anything that stands out to you, any one player, any trend, anything from this group?
Yeah, I think we can take this collection of names and basically divide it into three categories. And they describe three really important traits of successful fantasy managers, or just three things you got to get right during the course of a fantasy season. And number one are just the number of guys that were, you know, like when we see Jalen McMillan's name on here, particularly when we see Garendo and Dobbins, it's not like Garendo and Dobbins were carrying you. And even McMillan, like he had some great games, but they weren't necessarily the best receiver games late in the season. He was very consistent and all that. He kept scoring touchdowns. But this describes a type of fantasy manager, right? This describes somebody who is just really active every week and stays active on the wire through the end of the season. And the best and most successful fantasy managers are always adding, right? So that's what you're seeing there. And then you're also seeing guys who just had signature performances late in the year who carried you through the, you know, the literal playoffs. T. Higgins, great late in the season. Joe Burrow, obviously great late in the season. Jahmyr Gibbs and so on. Baker Mayfield. And then you're seeing guys who were just like for the full year, the just absolute right answers, like Saquon. Saquon, of course, on this list. It's just a blend of that, and Jahmyr Gibbs, obviously, part of that as well. And then the number of guys who were the other thing that strikes me here is the number of guys who were, and people will deny it now, like, oh, I was in on Bucky Irving the whole time. I was in on Baker Mayfield the whole time. But there was a point in the season when they were available in like 80-85% of Yahoo leagues, right? So those were early season waiver ads that just carried you through the entire year.
Yeah, I feel like every year looking at this list, I'm always reminding myself, like, I gotta be more active. You know, it's the number one takeaway at the end of every year. Like it can be annoying to like constantly churn the roster and like chase the next waiver ad or anything like that. But in sometimes you trick yourself and think like, nah, you know what? I'm set at receiver, whatever. Like, this is Jalen McMillan really going to be better than my current wide receiver 4 or 5 or whatever? But especially when it's rookies. I mean, that is a big takeaway here from the McMillan thing is, and look, I will say without question, I think McMillan has been one of the most improved players over the course of the season, because I will not hold back, and I don't feel bad for saying that his film early in his rookie season was not good. Okay. And like, there were times where they were easing him out of the rotation. Even when he got back from an injury, they were like, we're just going to play Sterling Shepard because he's more reliable. Yeah. And like, this is freaking Sterling Shepard after a bajillion injuries and like a deep, deep veteran at this point in his career. But like, McMillan just wasn't playing well. He has been playing well lately. Like, and that's just the thing with rookies. Like, the early season film can sometimes lie to you. Don't judge them too quickly. You know, he is definitely a player on the rise. And like, it just always pays to bet on rookies rising in the second half of the year. Not always, it's not 100% hit rate, anything like that, but especially when you can bet on them in good ecosystems, which the fact that there are $3 on this list, that stands out to me, that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense was one of the best ecosystems in the NFL this season. Obviously, like I said, they're going into the playoffs. Mike Evans got his 1,000 yards in week 18, one of the best ecosystems in the NFL.
Yeah. And, before Jalen McMillan was one of the right answers, Godwin was one of the right answers. I mean, Godwin, were several weeks into the season and he was in a battle to be the overall wide receiver one. And that's just, you know, a testament not only to his ability, but to the system itself.
No, absolutely. So I think this is just, it's an interesting list. Yeah. There's some like kind of, I mean, the Garendo thing is just a great example of be active, you know, because my two of my best fantasy teams, I had Garendo on and was almost more annoyed that I couldn't use him because of like timing and things like that. But they were like the right type of teams to have Isaac Garendo on. But let's move to the next list that we have here, which is top 10 players on playoff teams. There's going to be some overlap here, but Saquon Barkley, Ja'Marr Chase, Isaac Garendo, Derrick Henry, Jonnu Smith, Alvin Kamara, Lamar Jackson, Chuba Hubbard, Brock Bowers, Josh Jacobs. Okay, I'm going to pitch this list to you this way, Andy. Which name on this list, if I had told you would be on it in the preseason, like if I had said, hey, this player at the end of the season is going to be on the like one of the 10 most common players on playoff teams, who would be the most shocking one to you?
That's a you know, it's probably Jonnu Smith, actually. And like you can make the case with almost any running back. And obviously, you know, it's close with Brock Bowers too, because like looking at the two names, looking at Jonnu Smith and Brock Bowers and all the, you know, of all the guys that we talked about early in the season. And I remember having like preview shows where we would say, oh man, there's like five or six tight ends that I can imagine finishing as the overall tight end one. It wasn't either Jonnu Smith or Brock Bowers for me. They were not actually in that conversation. And then Bowers, of course, has the greatest rookie receiving season that we've ever seen. And Jonnu Smith becomes like the decisive playmaker in Miami's offense, leapfrogging even Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, who battled injuries all year. Like, those are probably the most surprising names to me. No running back will surprise me. Like, I, of course, there are some weird running backs on here, and it would have been a mild surprise that Chuba Hubbard makes the list. And, you know, I feel like Garendo is also a placeholder for Jordan Mason. And I would love to know, like, of these playoff teams and of the, you know, the most successful regular season teams winning as fantasy teams, I would also love to know how many at some point had Jordan Mason on the roster. That's because he was, for half a season, he was the right answer.
No, that's a really good point. And yeah, just stand in for 49ers running back. And like, yeah, if I saw Isaac Garendo on this list in the preseason, I would have just assumed, okay, Christian McCaffrey, like I got to be really concerned about this Achilles calf thing that they're telling me not to be concerned about. That would be the takeaway there. And yeah, definitely, like if I had seen Chuba Hubbard, that would be a surprise. And, you know, listen, it's just, the Chuba Hubbard thing is one of, I think, the better stories of the season. He's been such an incredible player. And obviously, he missed the last 2 weeks of the season, but he's been an incredible player for them. And that's just another testament to how Dave Canales, I think, has changed the rushing ecosystem in Carolina for sure. Otherwise, like, Jonnu Smith, yeah, especially if I'd said, hey, Andy, by the way, just before I show you this list, I also want to tell you that Tua's going to miss like a month plus of the season. Okay. But let me show you this list one more time. And then boom, Jonnu Smith pops up. That would be a pretty big surprise. But athletic tight ends, you know, later in their careers have sometimes given us those surprise season in fantasy. And Jonnu Smith, definitely the next one to do it. Otherwise, man, the fact that there's only one wide receiver on this list, it's Ja'Marr Chase. I'll just say, put a pin in that for a conversation we're going to have in the third segment. But Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, Josh Jacobs, these big name running backs being on this list, that was kind of the ticket of the season. Like, veteran running backs, it was the theme of fantasy this year. Those guys were the true difference makers for playoff teams.
Yeah, incredible season at the run. And I don't think you should expect running back to look exactly like this in 2025,
right?
Because a lot of the early guys, with the exception of McCaffrey, and, you know, Breece Hall disappointed you, but man, Bijan was a hit. Saquon was a massive hit. Derrick Henry has not slowed down even a fraction. Derrick Henry's amazing. Gibbs, amazing. Cook, amazing. Like we just had so many of the early round running backs hit, so many of the dead zone running backs hit too. Like, that wasn't even a bad range to shop in necessarily. You get Joe Mixon there, you get James Conner there. Like, this is a good year for featured running backs.
All right, last list here that we'll go through, and I won't read off all of these names because it's 25 and I can barely talk as it is. Plus, there's a lot of overlap here, but top 25 players on championship teams, 8 of them are rookies. We've got Jalen McMillan at 23.18%. We got Bucky Irving again at 21.98%. Ladd McConkey, 19%. Brian Thomas Jr., 18.78%. Then we have Malik Nabers, Jaden Daniels, Brock Bowers, Bo Nix. Rookies definitely, again, really always can be that difference maker for down the stretch and ultimately sealing a fantasy championship here. That was certainly the case in the 2024 season, Andy.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, it's a pretty major difference if you've been playing fantasy for a long time. You know, 20 years ago, you would never, you had zero expectations for a rookie quarterback. They just weren't even really on the map in fantasy. That'd be a silly way to manage a team to expect anything from a rookie quarterback until 2014, when, you know, it was the year of Odell Beckham and Mike Evans and, you know, the great receiver class comes into the league. Before then, you never expected anything from a rookie receiver. It was pretty much only like you might get a contribution from a rookie running back and that was it. But now it is a very reasonable expectation that at every position, tight end included, we're going to get, we're going to get meaningful contributions like RB1, wide receiver one type contributions from members of the rookie class. The other thing I want to say about this particular collection of names, and I'm just scrolling through and looking at the quarterbacks, Joe Burrow's on this list, Baker Mayfield on this list again. Who else? Jaden Daniels is on this list. Sam Darnold's on this list. Bo Nix is on this list. I had asked a couple days ago for some of the folks behind the scenes to give me a little bit of data on the 10 quarterbacks who appeared on the winningest fantasy rosters, and there were a million. Like, you could solve the quarterback position in every kind of way this year, and I think that's worth mentioning. There wasn't for as crazy good a year as Lamar Jackson has had, as Joe Burrow has had, Josh Allen, like they're not even close to the top of the list of the quarterbacks who appeared on the winningest rosters. Like, it's pretty nuts. You could solve this position with one of those guys, certainly, but you could also solve it from the waiver wire with Baker Mayfield, with Sam Darnold, with Bo Nix. You could solve it from the middle of the draft with Jaden Daniels. He was there, right? Like, just every draft range. I'm looking at other names on the list. Like, shoot, Josh Allen is 12th. Josh Allen's probably going to win the MVP. He's 12th on the list of quarterbacks who appeared on the winningest fantasy rosters. Like, that's crazy to me. You could solve it with Jared Goff. You could solve it with Justin Herbert, who nobody wanted at the start of the year, right? That was going to be a team was going to run 40 times a game, and Justin Herbert was going to pass it 18 times a game, and he was hopeless. But he was, you know, he appeared on the he's number 7 on this list. So, a lot of ways to solve the quarterback position. You don't need to draft it early, and in fact, if you did, you know, it, like, good for you. You could win that way, but other people won leagues with Bo Nix.
No, it's a great point. And you know, it's always an important lesson to take away. I've really enjoyed, like, in prior seasons, paying up for quarterbacks, you know, paying up for the elite guys, Allen, Lamar, whatever. But you know, there's many different ways to solve the position. That's always been true. As for the rookie thing, I actually lied. There's 9 rookies on the list because Isaac Garendo's on this list. Again, kind of weird. Still, yeah, he's not as much of an impact player as some of these other guys, but still he's a rookie. He's on this list. From the receiver standpoint, so many rookie receivers on this one. The fact that, again, Garendo notwithstanding, Bucky Irving is the only rookie running back. It might be flipped in this next class, right? Like, this next class, it seems like, might be stronger at the running back position and maybe even tight end than it is at receiver. This might have been a unique thing with these rookie wide receivers, but it's always still worth chasing these guys. But I mean, some of these players, I mean, shoot, I got flamed on freaking Instagram for saying, you know, that I'd rather have Brian Thomas Jr. over Christian Kirk in the offseason. Like, it's not always the rookies that we expect. It's certainly Jalen McMillan being at the top of the list. Like, you know, obviously Marvin Harrison Jr. went so high, he's definitely not on this list. Malik Nabers was relatively high, but he wasn't a guy that everybody had conviction on because of the quarterback situation, of course. And then Ladd McConkey, yeah, you mentioned it. I mean, people didn't want to draft Ladd because, oh, is he going to play in 2 receiver sets? LOL. What about the pass volume? Things like that. It's not always the rookie receivers we expect. So, again, sometimes it almost pays to go by volume at the rookie receiver spot. And that doesn't always mean to draft those guys. You could pick them up later off the waiver wire like a Jalen McMillan. But certainly, like, take it. Like, I would just it's going to depend, right? I don't know that this rookie receiver class is going to be as good. It sounds like it's not as good as this current group. This current group was very, very good and certainly showed out late in the year, especially the guys on this list. But it pays to kind of take some of these younger upside bets instead of the safe little boring veterans every season.
Yeah, you know, one other thing I would like to say about the rookie receivers is it's not a condemnation of the rookies who aren't on this list, right?
Totally.
The fact that Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't on this list, Rome Odunze isn't on this list, that's fine. Like, you can look back. I mentioned the 2014 receiver class. Well, that had Davante Adams in it, and he had a terrible rookie year. Like, yeah. We made jokes constantly about, like, Davante Adams couldn't hold on to the football. He had a terrible second season, too.
This second season was even worse.
Yeah, he was a bust. Like, he looked like a bust. And in the current, like, social media environment, right, where we all have to have hot takes about guys, like, immediately one game into their career, a month into their career, a season into their career. I can only imagine what we would be saying as a fantasy community about Davante Adams. It would, you know, that guy's going to the Hall of Fame. That guy and Mike Evans are the two best receivers from the 2014 receiver class, it turns out. And, you know, immediately after that year, you would have been on, like, Sammy Watkins and Odell Beckham, and we would have had it wrong, right? Kelvin Benjamin, right? He was great, Kelvin Benjamin, too.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great class, but, like, it just takes time, and not everybody is a superstar right away, and it's okay if they're not a superstar right away. It doesn't mean that they can't be great in 2 years, 3 years.
Oh, yeah. Allen Robinson had, like, 400 yards and a touchdown, yeah. And he had an injury, and then he led the freaking league in touchdowns his next season. And even this year, like, I know this is a much smaller example, but Marvin Mims was terrible as a rookie. I mean, shoot, mm-hmm. even Quentin Johnson was terrible as a rookie.
Terrible.
Like, stats aside, I'm just saying, watching those guys play, they could not function as NFL receivers as rookies. Both of those guys are closing the season. Obviously, Quentin Johnson on a 13-catch note. And Marvin Mims has been explosive down the stretch. Key in that Denver offense, I think, taking another step. And, like, I would be the first to tell you that those guys were terrible as rookies. Their reception perception data was, I mean, some of the worst I've ever charted. But at the same time, it's just one season. You know, they can get better.
Yeah.
It is a huge kind of concern, but it doesn't mean it's completely over for those guys. So that doesn't mean that, like, you know, your Jalen Polks or whatever are definitely going to make it back or anything like that. But it's just a good – and obviously JSN, I've talked about it a ton. It's a good example. Like, don't just cast guys. Like, what they do as rookies, that's what they're going to do forever. And this list, I think, should at least kind of give us pause on that. But, all right, with that, let's take our final break. We come back, we'll run through Andy's fantasy awards for the 2024 season right after this. All right, we're back. Andy, you and Scott, the great Scott Pianowski, had some fantasy awards in our fantasy newsletter, Get to the Points, which you guys should all subscribe to that. If you're not, you've betrayed us personally, which how could you do that? Listen to the sound of my voice. It's pained already, and now I'm even more pained that you're not subscribed to the newsletter. What a horrible thing to do. Make sure you fix that right now. But if you're not subscribed and you missed it, we're going to go through some of the fantasy awards that you guys handed out on this show here. The first five we'll break down in depth, and then we're going to give Andy sort of a chance to share his favorite of the, what I'll say are like the fun awards after that. But let's start off, Andy, with this year's fantasy MVP.
Yeah, I think there were a couple of really strong candidates for this, and no disrespect intended to Saquon Barkley when I tell you that I actually think Ja'Marr Chase was the fantasy MVP. Couple reasons for this. One is his incredible consistency at a very high level. We talk all the time about how it's just even the best receivers in the game, man, they're going to give you a 3-for-35 performance. Well, that just simply did not happen in the second half of Ja'Marr Chase's season. Like, we think about the huge games that he had throughout the year, and he had a couple of spike games that were just absolutely ridiculous, and he wins the receiving triple crown and all that. But, like, final 7 weeks of the season, his worst single game output was 9 catches for 94 yards. Like, you can definitely win the week on 9 for 94. And that's as bad as it ever got. So he was just great at a high level. He finished almost entering week 18, like through the full fantasy season, he finished almost 70 points ahead of the wide receiver two, Justin Jefferson. So just in terms of positional edge, there wasn't anything else like Ja'Marr Chase. He finished almost 140 points clear of Drake London, the wide receiver 10. Like, that's just, you know, that, like, 140 points is a pretty good season for a wide receiver in fantasy. And like, the gap between Drake London and Ja'Marr Chase was like a whole good receiver. He was just, you know, there's nobody else like him at the position. He not only did he win the Triple Crown, but like, he was well clear of like number two in a lot of categories.
Yeah, that positional edge, I think, is a great reason to give it to him, because there just was not another receiver that could even come, like you said, even come close to his level of production. I was thinking about that as like they were showing Justin Jefferson's stats, you know, currently leading into that Sunday Night Football game. I was like, man, he would have to have the game of his life to even threaten some of Ja'Marr Chase's stats, which obviously he did not. Come close to having that type of game. And obviously Ja'Marr Chase wins the Triple Crown. He is the fantasy wide receiver one, 20 points per game. Nobody else, like I said, even came close to that. Unbelievable season from him. If you drafted Ja'Marr Chase, he was one of the only like first round wide receivers that truly exceeded expectations this year. I can't wait to see what he does next year. You know, he's actually stated before that his goal is to win the Triple Crown every year. He could do it again. I mean, he could do it again next year. That would be obviously super impressive. He probably will not do it again next year, but there's nothing to say that he couldn't. He is an unbelievable player. And like, it's always tough who's the best receiver in the league. Some of it's preference, I think, you know, things like that. I always say like, there's a tier of one and any of those guys could be there. But like, Chase definitely belongs near the top of the league. And he's rare in that like, he's every bit the great route runner that some of these top guys are. He's every bit the ball winner that some of these top guys are. But he's also just, he can take it, you know, 0 to 60 in a minute. Like, he can house it from anywhere on the field, which is pretty unique among the top receivers in the league right now. Now that I think, you know, Tyreek Hill's probably not on that tier one anymore. But okay, let's get a little more negative here, Andy. Let's talk bust of the year.
Yeah, a hotly contested award, I would say. But we went with Breece Hall for this one. And it wasn't even a bad season when you really consider the team context, which was horrible, right? Like, the Jets were just nowhere near what even the most pessimistic fan might have expected from the Jets this year. They managed to dip a little bit lower than that, and Breece Hall got caught up in it. Like, just not enough explosive plays from him, and that was a hallmark of his season last year. Didn't force many missed tackles throughout the season. Just not impressive overall. He, you know, entering week 18, he was the RB18 on the season, and he'd been the consensus RB2, RB3 in Yahoo drafts all summer.
Yeah, I think you guys mentioned this in the newsletter. He mostly played, like, I mean, he played 16 games this season. He definitely dealt with injuries at times, and, you know, maybe that's all, like, that can always be a part of the equation, that they're dealing with something that we don't really know about. But the fact that he was available to you, it wasn't like CMC, like, oh yeah, you took CMC, guess what? Yeah. That sucks for your fantasy season, but you know, because he didn't play for most of the year. But Breece Hall was available to you, and you're still kind of just smacking your head against the wall. And you know, when you look around him in ADP, there were so many right answers at the running back position, and he was clearly one of the wrong ones.
Yeah, I will also say though that like, Tyreek Hill is very much in this conversation, right? And he's another guy who he played through injury throughout the year. And obviously not just his own injury, but Tua's injuries throughout the season kind of compromised his season. But like, he's in the conversation here. Debo Samuel is sure as in the conversation here. Anthony Richardson is definitely in the conversation because he obviously got QB1 overall hype and didn't play to that level, didn't play close to that level. The reason that I wouldn't give it to Richardson and that Scott didn't give it to Richardson is, of course, there's so many easy ways to answer the quarterback position in one quarterback leagues. You don't really, you should, like, your process was still okay drafting Anthony Richardson because you should always just take a, you should just take a shot because some people took Richardson, some people took Jaden Daniels, and that was right. You know, you want to get these like super high upside dual threat guys. And I'm sure that if you took Anthony Richardson, you had plenty of opportunities to save your season via, you know, Bo Nix, Baker Mayfield, all the other options that presented themselves.
Yeah, just looking back at like consensus ADP right now, the top 12 were Christian McCaffrey, Tyreek Hill, CeeDee Lamb, Breece Hall, Bijan Robinson, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown, AJ Brown, Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, Garrett Wilson. I do think that, like, yeah, it would have to be either again, I think being drafted in the first round, like, it's got to be one of those guys. Yeah, Anthony Richardson. Yeah. Okay, great. You just cut Richardson and, like, move on to Bo Nix or whatever. Like, yeah, you can solve that problem pretty easily. Even if, I mean, Scott's pretty good at this stuff. Like, he said it perfectly about Richardson all summer, that he was like an answer in search of a problem or something like that. like a problem in search of a solution. I don't know. You know, again, he said it better than me, but like, basically, you know, you didn't need to go looking for this solution. There was really no problem there with how high he was going in drafts. Whatever. Like, that was aggressive, but at the same time, it wasn't like, oh, I spent the second overall pick on Tyreek Hill or the fourth overall pick on Breece Hall, and they were available to me all season and didn't really do much. Hey, not just a quick tangent, did you see Tyreek Hill's post-game interview?
Yeah, wild scene. I saw the tweet that he sent. I did not see the post-game interview, but I read, you know, some of Coach McDaniel's comments too. That's a wild scenario.
The post-game interview, if you haven't watched it yet, I'm sure you can find it on social media. I think Omar Kelly, Dolphins writer, was the first one to put it out there, but obviously it's been aggregated a bajillion times since then. So just search Tyreek Hill on your social media app. You'll find it. It was just wild because he's clearly given like a very frustrated, or not a frustrated, almost like bewildered interview. And then just like blurts out kind of like, I'm out of here. It's like he couldn't help him. It's like he couldn't help himself. He couldn't stop himself from saying, I'm out of here. I wouldn't want to be the next team taking on Tyreek Hill. Let me just put it at that. I mean, yeah, I know I'm getting old, Andy, when I'm like, I'm very pro like athlete, get your money, the whole deal, all that. But at the same time, like, Tyreek, you wanted to get paid. You went to Miami. You were super gassed about it. You left a place that they've won a bunch of championships. Don't know if you've seen. And like, now you're pissed that you're not in the playoffs one year, and you want to pull yourself out of the game and get out of Miami. Not a lot of sympathy here on that one. But that's just, I think that's going to be kind of a stupid offseason story about where Tyreek Hill is going to get traded. And I don't know, I'm ready to see more opportunities for Jalen Waddle as it is. Not that he'll stay healthy for it, but whatever. Anyways, let's move on to the next one here. Sleeper of the year.
We gave sleeper of the year to Jaden Daniels. And it was part of the reason that he wins this is that it was too hard to choose a single rookie of the year, right? And you wanna acknowledge the incredible season that Daniels had. To put it simply, Daniels ended up being the guy that you thought Anthony Richardson was going to be, you know, just incredible dual threat ability, whatever you expected from him as a passer, he's surely exceeded that. Just absolutely incredible. And as Scott pointed out in the newsletter, down the stretch, in the most important weeks of the fantasy season, final 5 weeks, he finished as the overall QB1, QB2, QB7, QB1, and then QB4. So not a single dud in there. The kind of weeks that could carry you absolutely every time through to the next round. The kind of guy that like you could just sweep the final month and a half of the season with Jaden Daniels. So the close to his year, and it wasn't perfect at all times, but and shoot, he's another guy. I mentioned it with Bryce Young, you know, a while ago, but I don't know. We might not see Jaden Daniels play with a receiving core that is this bad ever again. Because people are going to be lining up to go there, right? I would want to be paired with Jaden Daniels for the next decade if I were a talented receiver, or if I was a veteran receiver, you know, heading into my final years, I might be really interested in pairing myself with Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin. So, like, once they get wide receiver two figured out, man, that is going to be an incredibly dangerous team.
Oh, it's such a good point. My best friend's a Commanders fan, obviously, just where I grew up, and he's obviously thrilled about the way the season has gone. He texted me yesterday and said, like, you know, put your GM hat on. Like, who is, like, what type of wide receiver does this team need, you know, going forward? By the way, I appreciate that's like a professional tee up by Andrew. Shout out. It's like, are you throwing me something on a podcast here, buddy? What's the deal? Anyways, I said, look, this Chris Godwin is actually a free agent. It doesn't have to be Chris Godwin, but that would be sick. But like, that's the type of receiver they should go for, like a power slot type that could block in the run game, give Jaden Daniels like somebody that, okay, I can just dump it off to him, give him a screen, whatever, and he gets me where it should be 5 yards. Maybe he gets me 10, something like that. Like, they have not had a receiver like that in this offense. You know, again, we don't want to judge rookies too harshly, but I thought Luke McCaffrey might at some point this season emerge as that guy, and he is definitely a developmental rookie, so maybe he is that like kind of layup power slot guy at some point for them. But like a veteran, like a Chris Godwin, my hunch is that Godwin actually returns to Tampa Bay on a team-friendly deal coming off an injury, things like that. You know, he's just had a great run there. My guess is that why would he not want to go back there? But if he wants to go elsewhere, that would be a great, that like, that's the type of receiver I think could really thrive in this offense.
No, it's a really good call. And I mean, consider the guys that they were treating as number two receivers throughout the year at various points. Noah Brown, it was Deami Brown, Jameson Crowder is like, it's that Zach Ertz essentially functioning as like the wide receiver two for portions of the year. Like, it's going to be better. It's going to be better in almost every other season of Daniel's career.
Okay. Dead zone running back of the year. I imagine this was a rather hotly contested one because there were some pretty decent options.
Depending on how you define the RB dead zone, there were great options. Like, Joe Mixon was essentially at the upper fringes of the dead zone. David Montgomery, essentially in the dead zone. He obviously injured at the end of the year, but he was a right answer for a really long time. Aaron Jones, we gave this to James Conner. But man, the greater point to make, I think, is that there were so many right answers in the dead zone, which is not, you know, that's not typical. And one of the big reasons over time, over many years, to avoid the RB dead zone is that that is often where we find some of the most important wide receiver breakouts in the game, right? Like, that's the position that you should generally be chasing in this range. But man, it was a good year for running backs who are pretty close to their expiration date, if not past it. And we saw that with Jones, we saw that with Mixon, we saw that with Connor. Connor was terrific. I feel really bad that James Connor didn't like take the field in week 18, because it would have been the only year of his career in which he actually played every game, right? Like, he came really close to doing that. Still, at 29, he gives us over 1,500 scrimmage yards. His best games were just absolutely tremendous. He more than held off every other running back who was supposed to challenge him to be the future at that position in Arizona, right? Like, he was so good. When healthy, James Conner is just a great, great player. And I know it didn't work out for you in like title week with James Conner, but he was so damn good all year.
Oh, so good. Yeah. And it was a great season for like this archetype of running back. And yeah, definitely. I don't know what we're going to do about that in drafts next year, but it was, again, one of the themes of the season, you know, these veteran running backs and things like that. Not just the top tier guys, the Barkleys and the Henrys and the Jacobs and whatever. But yeah, even Alvin Kamara went sort of in this zone. He might have been a guy to consider as well. But James Conner definitely was awesome all year. Got himself a contract extension. Like, he's going to be right back in this role next year, and we'll see what he does. And you know, it sounds like the Cardinals are, I don't know if that's changed since we've recorded this, but at least last I heard, they were going to probably bring back Drew Petzing and the whole crew there. So it will be interesting to sort of track that offense and what they're going to do next season. Last one we'll break down in depth before I give Andy a chance to share any fun ones. Fantasy rookie of the year.
Yeah. I went with Brock Bowers for this. And this is another one where there's a lot of right answers, right? we could have gone a lot of different directions, and we basically created an award for Jaden Daniels because he deserves this too. Bucky Irving deserves this award. Like, I mean, shoot, Brian Thomas deserves this award, right? Like, he was great. There's you can go a lot of different directions here. We went with Brock Bowers in a season in which he's catching passes from Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. So not in an ideal situation. He comes into the year and we think he's, you know, buried in the receiving hierarchy behind Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers. And like, oh gosh, is there a path to Brock Bowers catching 60 passes this year? Well, he caught 112. he saw over 150 targets and he finished with nearly 1200 receiving yards, and he broke a 63-year-old receiving yardage record at the position for rookies. And he breaks Puka Nacua's rookie reception record set last year. He outproduces Malik Nabers in terms of receptions. I mean, just an absolutely phenomenal year. And Bowers is clearly moving forward. Maybe, you know, I remember one thing that, you know, we talked about coming into the season at tight end is that historically, we generally see somebody emerge as the tight end one, and then they just have that role for like 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, right? Kelsey did it. Gronk did it. Gates did it. It's pretty easy to imagine Brock Bowers doing it. I don't know what the quarterback situation is going to be next year, but it's not going to be worse than it was in 2024. And again, he just caught 112 passes.
Yeah, Brock Bowers was targeted 153 times, sixth most in the NFL. You've got to go all the way down. I think Trey McBride was targeted 147 times, and then it's Travis Kelce is second among tight ends, 133. I mean, that is just bonkers for Brock Bowers and tight end one overall in fantasy. I mean, you just can't say enough like good things. He only had six end zone targets on the season, which is pretty nuts that he was still so good.
Yeah.
I mean, not a lot of end zone opportunities to go around for the 2024 Las Vegas Raiders, but yeah, Brock Bowers. I can't wait to see what that coaching staff. I don't know what the hell they're going to do at quarterback next year. We'll see, but it's going to be pretty exciting no matter what for Brock Bowers, who I imagine will be what, like a second round pick, bare minimum,
yeah,
in fantasy next year.
Yeah, I think so. He's again, people are going to look at this and say, man, he caught 112 balls in that environment, and I don't know what we're going to be dealing with at quarterback. Maybe it's a fun rookie. Maybe it's Jameis Winston. I have no idea who the quarterback is going to be, but like, we're going to talk ourselves into Brock Bowers next year if not as a tier of his own tight end. He'll be the top tight end in a very small tier. That is maybe him and Trey McBride and maybe Kittle, maybe not.
We actually don't need a Jameis for the Raiders. We need a Jameis with like, again, the Jets for a Garrett Wilson, a Giants, yeah, for Malik Nabers, like a downfield receiver that he's just going to pepper, you know, vertical opportunities to. We need someone. It's not going to be Minshew, obviously, but we need someone in the Minshew mold, a little bit more timid, not totally gun shy, but a little bit more timid and like the quick release, because that was, even with Davante Adams early in the season, it was pretty clear that Minshew was going to do the Michael Pittman stuff with Brock Bowers, where he was just going to pop, 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 pop over and, yeah, over again. That's kind of the guy we need for Brock Bowers, to just scam some receptions out of him in this offense next year, if it's not going to be a fun rookie, which is probably not going to be a fun rookie, because there's not that many, yeah, fun rookies, it sounds like,
no,
for this class. So, all right, Andy, you have a ton of others that people should check out in the newsletter, obviously, but give me a few of your most enjoyable kind of fun awards that you guys handed out.
Yeah, I'll give you three, and I'll start with the guy that we just mentioned. The winner of our Billy Volek Award was Jameis Winston. If people are not familiar with Billy Volek, they should get familiar. They should know their fantasy history. In, I believe it was December of 2004, Volek had back-to-back 400-yard passing performances. Like, this is a guy that, I don't know, most of us had barely heard of. An opportunity finds Billy Volek. And he actually put together, I want to say it was a string of three games in which he averaged nearly 400 yards. Two of them, he hit 400 yards. It was absolutely bonkers. He did almost all of it with Drew Bennett. I believe like, I think Volek threw 11 touchdown passes over 3 weeks, and maybe 8 or 9 of them went to Drew Bennett. It was an incredible binge. And then the other part of the Billy Volek story is that when it ended emphatically and you lost. He had a terrible game in championship week when you would talk yourself into, oh man, I got the shining fantasy star of the season. And then he put up like 100 yards and no touchdowns and it was terrible and you definitely lost. And so Jameis Winston, of course, fits this just to a T, right? Mm. Like the best game of his season, nearly 500 yards in that wild game against Denver. And it's multiple touchdowns. He throws 2 pick-sixes, but it's just a party of a game. And Jameis was great for a short stretch there. Great in fantasy terms and obviously kind of a game wrecker in real terms, but also pretty fun. And then when it ended for Jameis, it ended pretty emphatically. He throws 3 interceptions against Kansas City, and we're just done. No fantasy goodies in that game. And then, you know, he's a little bit injured, and they shelve him, so the Browns can't accidentally win any games down the stretch. But Jameis came the closest to delivering a Billy Volek style conclusion to his season than anybody else did. I also want to award, we've talked about Jalen McMillan a few times already. We gave the Patrick Jeffers Award to Jalen McMillan, and producer Colin had the, like, okay, producer Colin, he's younger than I am. He's younger than Scott is, of course. There are some things that producer
he's younger
Colin
than me,
know.
To be clear. He's younger than me.
Colin asked, was brazen enough to ask, who the hell is Patrick Jeffers? Patrick Jeffers is a fantasy legend. Patrick Jeffers in 1999, he concluded his, okay, 1999.
Colin's probably born in 1999.
I'm really going back there.
but still.
But maybe, not that far off. Like 1999, Patrick Jeffers, another guy who, you know, Carolina receiver, comes a little bit out of nowhere. Injuries clear a path to him seeing a ton of targets. And you got to remember, like, 1999 was not the receiving era that we are in today. And somebody concluding their year with over 700 receiving yards and 8 touchdowns over 5 games, clearing 100 yards every week, that was just absolutely incredible. And that's what Jeffers did. He was one of the great waiver wire finds of all time and carried you through the fantasy postseason. It was an incredible run. I think maybe the following year he had an ACL injury and it kept him out all year. And then like his career just never, like, it peaked in 99, but it was just a marvelous run for fantasy. Anyway, the obvious recipient of that is going to be Jalen McMillan, who would not stop scoring touchdowns when he needed it most over the final 4 games of the year. It was just absolutely incredible run. I will say, like, Jeffers was like a legit star by the end of that year. And I don't know what to tell you Jalen McMillan is. I fully agree with you that he is really, you know, where he was at the start of the year to where he was at the end of the year, incredible. It was also kind of a wild ride with McMillan. You know, he had the crazy penalty in week 18. He had the deep ball that should have been a touchdown that became an interception the week before, right? Like, it's not perfectly clean with McMillan, yeah. But in a total party of an offense, he was just absolutely great down the stretch. Final award that we'll hand out was the lying liar who never stops lying award, and that went to Kyle Shanahan, who just wrecked us early in the year, right? Like nobody else came close to doing this. And I understand NFL head coaches are going to keep some information close to the vest. It's understandable. I mean, Kyle just flat out told us that Christian McCaffrey was looking good for week 1. And then a few days later, McCaffrey was on IR, and they clearly never intended to have McCaffrey play in week 1. And like 3 weeks after that, CMC is on a plane to Munich looking for calf and Achilles elixirs. I mean, it was just, and that, you know, if you had McCaffrey, and I don't blame anybody who drafted McCaffrey first overall. He stayed at number 1 in my ranks. I happened to luck into not getting the first overall pick in very many drafts, so I didn't have the McCaffrey problem as others did. But man, that's just a brutal way for your fantasy season to go down. Hopefully you were able to play the, you know, parade of Niners running backs who came through for us. Jordan Mason was awesome for half a year, and then Garendo down the stretch had some great moments too. But man, nobody did us as dirty as Kyle Shanahan did.
Yeah, that was tough. Not the best. Certainly, so I did have one. I have one McCaffrey dynasty team, which went from contender to rebuilder very quickly, thanks to that. but yeah, it wasn't too many McCaffrey teams for me this year. Well, I want to put you on the spot with one last one here, and then we'll close the show. One of the awards you guys handed out was the Kyle Pitts Award for underwhelming performance following excessive hype, which was handed out to Kyle Pitts. Understandable. Get it. I actually want to put you on the spot here, and I'm going to make you be mean for your last one here, Andy. Give me your prediction. Who is going to be the 2025 award winner of the Kyle Pitts Award for underwhelming performance following excessive hype?
Oh, man. Well, I would say Kyle Pitts is the front runner.
I don't think he's going to get the same I don't think he's going to get the same excessive hype. I don't know that he's going. I don't know he's going to go on a Lamar Jackson MVP run and do it like twice in a row here.
This is a good question. So it's probably got to be somebody who just really really thrives at the end of the year, and we gas him up a little bit. The likeliest candidates for this, you know, of course we could have given this award to Anthony Richardson, who had a ton of hype coming into the year. So maybe it's somebody who falls into that lane. It could be, you know, honestly, it could be somebody that I talked up at the beginning of the show. It could be Ricky Pearsall.
No.
I hate to think about that. But there are so many good receiving options in San Francisco. And if everybody's back, there might just not be room for him, and he might be a guy who just has like two or three spike weeks and doesn't make a lot of noise for the rest of the season, and you feel like you can't start him. But he also comes into the year with excessive hype. So it's a possibility that it's Pearsall. I hope it's not.
Okay. Well, on that note, Barons, I was giving you a chance to be fun, and you have to come in here and insult one of my favorite prospects from last year's class. Terrible
apologies.
Stuff by you. No, but that's okay. Andy, this was a jam-packed show. Appreciate you, buddy. Hell of a week. I don't know. This was like a week 18. What the hell would we even call this show? Week 18 recap plus a bajillion other things?
Yeah, it's a great question. It was at least a bajillion other things.
A bajillion other things. What a great title. That'll definitely get us a ton of clicks and views on YouTube and across every podcast network. But that is going to do it for today's show. Andy, again, shout out to you. Make sure you check out all of the awards in the Get to the Points newsletter. On Thursday, we are going to be previewing a loaded wild card weekend. So make sure you come back for that. Until then, we are out.